Venti vanilla cream cold brew with extra sweet cream, vanilla, super cold foam, funnel cake. Funnel what?
I don't know. It just funnel says funnel. Topping, yeah.
4 pumps of added funnel syrup. 1 pump of white mocha.
I think you're all hopped up on goofballs.
I'll never sleep again.
Hello, welcome to Guides to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week we are talking about psychic phonies, flim-flam artists, people you can't trust.
Yeah, people that maybe have bilked you out of your zillions.
Mm-hmm, your precious coins and doubloons.
My money! We last week talked about mediums, trance mediums, and physical mediums, but we've been planning to cover, like, people that have defrauded people,
yeah.
Fake psychics forever, which is funny because I, depending on the day, I think psychics are fake
right.
all the time. But so I've been so eagerly looking forward to this episode, and I, for the first time ever, I think on this show, gave a bit of a cliffhanger last week.
You definitely have before.
Have I?
Yes.
Well, not that I remember.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't remember very much, so who knows?
I feel like I've definitely done the thing I did last week where you're like, a little tease is that we'll be doing bloobity blah blah.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
so.
You should just say the thing because you basically just did.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
But last week I gave a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I gave a sort of a scandalous peek at what I'm going to be talking about a little bit. If you don't mind me launching it just to pay off.
I don't remember.
The...
Go ahead.
Oh, great. Okay. Then this is even more fun.
Oh, now I do. Now I do. Okay. Go.
Last week in like the last couple seconds of the show, I was like, next week I'm going to talk about the time a guy brought his dead daughter into the Howard Stern show.
Yes.
And I assume you forgot about it right after we...
I did.
We forget everything we said 2 seconds after we're done recording.
Absolutely.
But so I've been looking forward to getting to tell you this story all week, and I've been hoping that you wouldn't have looked it up on your own, so I'm very thrilled. So I'm going to tell you about, very quickly, or it might take a bit.
Take your time.
It might take a little bit. I'm going to tell you about Anthony Zipper.
Okay.
And his daughter, Callistra.
Okay.
All right. So, in August 15th it was, of 2000, the Howard Stern Show, where Anthony Zipper called in, and he was trying to promote the idea that, quote, all Americans must enjoy their inalienable right to preserve their beloved departed loved ones for all time.
Okay.
Literally, he was promoting the idea of taxidermying the dead. Spoiler alert, this guy's not a psychic,
mm-hmm.
but I think he counts
well,
as
he's
a
phony. Scammed, it sounds
exactly.
like.
So
yeah.
it's a stretch, but
it's fine.
There's no other place to talk about this guy. All right. I saw this a few years back and it blew my mind. So Howard Stern, talking to this guy on the phone, is like, what? What are you talking about? And he says that he had his daughter, Callistra, taxidermied. And so Howard Stern and the team arrange for him to come in. They do a show October 31st, 2000, very appropriately,
yes.
Halloween, where Anthony Zipper brings in his daughter, Callistra, and he traveled with her from L.A. in a suitcase.
Okay.
So, in the studio, and this is filmed because they used to film the Howard Stern show and play it on, you know, E! Or whatever. So, Anthony Zipper, looking very much like a mortician, he's sort of like a thin... tall guy, very buttoned up and together, doing that sort of like posh American.
He's talking like Magister Blackwell.
Good to meet you,
Captain
Howard
Williams.
Stern. Yeah. No, he talks a little bit honestly, kind of like a Frasier.
Okay.
Like that sort of like put together, like, well, I don't know if I should be telling you this, but yes, it was her wish to not be put in the ground. You know, like sort of composed, but coming off with this real... gross vibe.
Uh-huh.
Really, a real, yeah, who's that guy?
Who?
I don't think I should say his name on here. The mortician in the Berkshires.
Yes.
I shouldn't say his name.
Yes.
What, is that the job, mortician? Undertaker?
Yes.
Undertaker?
I think they call them mortician.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's coming off like somebody,
a funeral home director.
Funeral home director.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah, he's coming across like very presentable. But it's feeling like somebody who spends all his time around dead bodies.
Yeah.
All right. So he comes into the studio, and he's got Callistra in a wheelchair because she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sheet over her. Somebody, I think Fred, the sound guy on the Howard Stern show, I think Fred Norris goes, "No, she's covered in cheesecloth." To me, it looked like a muslin sheet.
Okay. Cheesecloth is often muslin.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. So muslin, very interestingly, is what...
No one's ever said that before.
Let me tell you, everybody, get real close to your speakers. I'm going to tell you something
muslin,
really...
Muslin, interestingly.
It's a fascinating thing about the... the chemical composition of muslin, if I can take some time. No, muslin is what they used in those like spirit photography yep. things. The fraudsters that we talked about, well, the mediums we talked mm-hmm. about last week, they would use muslin to look like ectoplasm in photos.
Right.
I use it to swaddle my baby. Right. I have muslin blankets all up in this place.
Yes. Muslin is a very popular fabric.
Yes. It's
it
got,
breathes well.
My muslin has hearts on it and stuff, mm-hmm. but they use just like white
yeah.
muslin to, as ectoplasm. And Anthony Zipper's got it covering his dead daughter.
Right.
Which to me is almost weirdly like in the legacy of mediumship.
Muslin.
I can't imagine that this was intentional, but to use particularly like muslin to cover yeah. a dead body and be doing a sort of morbid fraud
mm-hmm.
showmanship thing. It sort of all tied it together to me a little bit.
It does. It's also surprising to me, though, that he had her covered up with the sheet anyway, because if his whole thing was that he had her taxidermied, that's supposed to suggest, like, an ongoing life sort of thing.
Right.
So to cover them with a sheet, which is what you do with dead bodies in the morgue, seems to go against that.
I agree. I think that some of this is also, obviously, he knew it was being filmed mm-hmm. on camera. A lot of this is showmanship.
Razzle dazzle.
Right? So you've got her. And honestly, when I first watched this video, and I looked this up, because I was getting into the Howard Stern show, so I just, you know, I like spooky stuff. So I started trying to see if Howard Stern ever covered horror movies or something. And I found this
mm-hmm.
video, which I'll have links in the show notes if you want to watch it. When you watch it with what I'm telling you about how it's fake, you're not going to enjoy it the way that I did when I was like wanting it to be real on some level. Because spoiler alert, this is all garbage. But you'll see how much garbage it is. But I think it's going to be so obvious when you watch it with the mindset of like...
I know this is fake.
Yeah, it's going to be outrageous that I ever thought it could be anything but phony. So he starts to tell Howard about his daughter Callistra and how she was in life and how she was a huge fan of Howard Stern
mm-hmm.
and Madonna.
Okay.
She was born on Madonna's birthday, and Howard, on his own, produces a letter which Anthony Zipper wrote on his daughter Callistra's behalf to Madonna. And Anthony Zipper goes, "Pardon me, how did you get that?" And Howard goes, "Well, I could tell you how I got it. Can I say how we got it, Gary?" And Gary Delabate goes, "Yeah, Madonna's people gave it to us." So it really implies that outside of Anthony Zipper, this guy with his contrived "my daughter is taxidermied" scenario, this implies now that Gary Delabate, Baba Booey, and Howard Stern have spoken to Madonna's reps on the side about this guy and gotten a letter from them.
How do they even know to?
I don't understand. But so Howard starts to read some of the letter. "Dear Madonna, my beloved daughter Callistra was born on your birthday in 1984. Perhaps that's the reason she loved you. But of course, there was so much more. Throughout her life," and then Robin interrupts and goes, "So this is before she died, she got into Madonna."
Oh.
And he goes, yes, of course. And in the letter, he continues to explain, "I found after she died a hidden notebook of hers. She apparently loved you. She loved Howard Stern." And then they all get interrupted and they stop reading that letter. But so the setup is he's been writing to people that his daughter liked.
Uh-huh.
And Howard has done the research to get in touch with those other people, presumably, or something. So
what is
this real, right? Robin asks, "What killed Callistra? How did she die?" It's the Howard Stern show. Not only that, this is the Howard Stern show in the early 2000s.
A while ago.
The language is not appropriate for today. there are a lot of things that are like terms that I don't stand by and that I'm not going to use here. But Anthony Zipper says that his daughter had Tourette's, cystic fibrosis, and then in one of the first giveaways, he goes, and what was it? He doesn't know the other condition that his daughter had. What was it? Oh, Turner syndrome, I think it was. You think it was?
That's
Come on.
Odd.
That's odd. So it starts to fall apart already. And Robin asks, "How did she die?" And he goes, "Oh, well, there's a quote. I wrote this down from the video. Oh, well, the overwhelming system was And Howard helps him finish the sentence. He goes, it overwhelmed her system? And he goes, exactly. And Robin goes, huh, I've never heard of that. So she's not having it. Robin's not having this at all.
Yeah.
Howard's clearly trying to keep this thing in motion.
Uh-huh.
Right?
So what are they not having? Like, do you think... Is it that they know that this is not really a dead person here?
I have reason... When you watch the video,
yeah,
particularly with everything I'm telling you about it, you're going to absolutely think this whole thing is staged and this is entertainment for the radio. They probably brought this guy in to play a part, mm-hmm, just to make a cool, spooky show.
Oh, okay.
I have reason to think that they booked a guy, didn't care what was real or not,
yeah,
and just let it play out.
Yeah.
But I do think that Robin's like, I don't believe a single ounce of this.
Yeah.
And Howard isn't interested in cutting through to the reality. He wants to play out the bit.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes,
I don't know if he believes it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I have reason to think that he doesn't believe it himself either, but yeah, we'll see. So Anthony Zipper explains that his daughter Calistra left a tape behind,
mm-hmm,
that his act of having her taxidermied is not some perversion of her life. It's what his daughter actually wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So oddly, Anthony Zipper is really just carrying out what Calistra had asked
final
for.
Wishes.
Exactly. So he plays a tape of her voice on the show. Here's what the tape says. Hello, this is Calistra. I don't know where you went. You were here before, but now you're gone. Which to me sounds like bad writing about, like, trying to seem like she was in between life,
yeah,
and
right,
death.
Right.
You were here, but now you're gone.
Uh-huh.
I feel my time is coming soon. I just wanted to let you know a few things. I wanted to make sure you remember to always keep me with you. Please don't put me into the ground. I'm so scared of dark places. I don't want to be in the ground. And then they're talking over it a little bit, but the final thing you get from the tape is, I also want to make sure that you take good care of my turtle Howard and my kitty Robin. And Robin immediately starts going, my turtle Howard? My kitty Robin? She's not having it. This guy's overselling
it. She's totally over it.
Not only did this guy have his daughter taxidermied and he called into the Howard Stern show in August, his daughter was all about Howard Stern.
Uh-huh.
I don't think so, right? So... it's all starting to fall apart. Howard's now even making fun of him a little bit. Uh-huh. Gary's just laughing.
Yeah.
Robin is just not connecting with this at all. They use a ton of Howard Stern words and,
yeah,
Howard Stern claims. They accuse this guy of doing very Howard Stern kinds of accusations. Supposedly he did get her implants. And After. And he says that he wanted to help her physically be able to, like, mature.
Oy vey.
It's gross.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not telling you this is some,
I know,
chill.
I know.
Badass visit.
God.
So, all right. So
really, our years are hard to listen to.
Sometimes, yes. His wife is on the phone now.
Uh-huh.
All right, Helen. She's like, my God, Anthony, what have you done to her? And he goes, Helen, what are you doing? What are you doing on the phone? Here's another break. Howard goes, what are you talking about? You gave us her number. So this guy's whole thing is falling apart. Their improv is terrible.
Uh-huh.
The way that he responds to Howard going like, what do you mean? How is your wife on the phone? You gave us her phone number. He goes, well, I thought she might refuse, as if, I don't know, a good save.
My
good
God. Save, dude.
And then she's not offering much on the phone. He keeps going, Helen, go back to sleep. Go back to sleep, Helen.
What's the point of this phone call?
Like, she's not contributing very,
yeah,
much. At one point, she goes, my God, Anthony, what have you done? Which is so big and crazy. They finally uncover the body. This is where it becomes so apparent that it's fake, but I do have one thing that pulls it back. So, they uncover the body. They take the muslin sheet off of it, finally, to unveil Calistra. And she looks so odd.
Mm-hmm.
Her skin is waxy on her face. There's a wig because she died and her hair fell out.
Mm-hmm.
She's wearing giant sunglasses. She's got a bunch of necklaces on. She's got a leather jacket and a dress, almost like very like Material Girl, very,
uh-huh,
very like Madonna, and high tops. She's,
uh-huh,
got cons. And Robin's like, those shoes are a little big. This is weird. Like, the arms and the jacket are all puffed up. Like, they shoved, like...
strange.
Like, they shoved, like, padding
newspapers
in there.
Newspapers.
Like, yeah, it just looks crazy.
Yeah.
Her proportions are insane. But Howard starts going, what am I looking at? everyone's laughing, but he's going like, what is, Robin, what is that? And she goes, I don't know. And Howard's like, I've never seen anything like this before. And they're close-ups of Callistra's face. And she, there are like little like divots and scars in her. Here's, all right, here's something crazy. One of the first times I ever did a show about morbid material was way back on a show I used to do called Will and Bobby Know Everything. My old writing partner, Bobby, and I, little brother, would just like talk about whatever we wanted to talk about. And I had found out about a guy named Dr. Carl Tanzler.
Yeah.
Dr. Carl Tanzler, and this is a true story, was a doctor who fell in love with one of his patients who died of tuberculosis. He dug up her body and he repaired her with paper mache. And he kept her. He maintained her body. I was looking at Callistra and thinking...
Yeah, I've been thinking about this whole time.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, of course.
I was thinking all about Dr. Carl Tanzler and thinking about paper mache. And then at one point in the video, they're like, what's up with her face? He goes, well, I had to restore her. You know, I wasn't able to taxidermy her right away. So you're looking at, you know, paper mache and all these, and it was paper mache. Mm-hmm. It's very specific. Did he do his research or what? And then Robin goes, you know what that is? And then several people fill in the answer at once. Styrofoam. It looks like painted styrofoam.
Uh-huh.
So is it just a styrofoam head? So they go, take the sunglasses off of that thing. And so you're expecting to see, you know, like how styrofoam mannequins just have like their eyes out. They take the glasses off. And she has eyelids and eyelashes that are like puffy and pulled closed. And once the glasses came off, I started not being sure what I was looking at. Me, Will. I still know it's fake, but it started to look very much like, you know how like David Lynch does like sculptures?
Uh-huh.
You can't really figure out what he made them out of, but they look organic,
mm-hmm.
fleshy, and gross.
Mm-hmm.
That is what Callistra looks like with her glass, or with her sunglasses off. It's very scary looking to me. Honestly, everybody, the whole thing starts to fall apart, but Howard still keeps going like what is that? And even Robin at a certain point is like, I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know, but she still is not buying it.
Right.
I'm trying to pull up a photo to show you. I'm not going to be able to get a good one in time, but I'll show you after. Everybody can look this up again. I'm going to have links in the show notes. But it's very creepy, and then it all just starts to really, truly, definitively devolve, where even at a certain point, Fred is, like, they're laughing at the guy, and I think Jackie on the show starts going, hey, can we push that thing down the stairs? Like Casey, who like I guess was one of the like producers.
I forgot about Casey.
Yeah, he starts going like, hey, Howard, can I rip the head off this thing?
Oh my God. All right, so Will is showing this to me. It still looks like styrofoam to me. It looks like styrofoam that they just... I thought it was going to be weirder looking.
Really? But don't the eyes look strange to you?
They definitely do look strange, but it almost... I feel like he glued something onto the bumps of the eyes on a styrofoam mannequin to create eyelids. And then the eyelashes are like super thick and just hanging straight down. So it actually looks like he applied a strip of false lashes.
You would know
and
more
they're
about,
going straight down instead of like out the way that they're supposed to.
Yes, you would certainly know more about false lashes than I would.
I mean, but marginally.
But for sure, like it's crazy to me that her eyelids look to be three-dimensional.
Yeah, I mean,
and like the top eyelid has a depth to it.
I think that he probably just like applied something on there in an eyelid shape.
To be clear, I don't think I'm looking at
the face of a
corpse.
But it definitely, it still looks like a mannequin thing.
It looks crazy.
Yeah.
It looks crazy.
Yeah.
But like the claim isn't that you're looking at her skin anyway. The claim is that you're looking at paper mache that's covering the body, which is still very frightening in concept and something that people have actually done before. So who's to say? I can say. So I've done some research on this. Anthony Zipper, the dad, he's laughed out of the studio, by the way.
Of course.
And Robin even says like, Howard starts trying to salvage it and going like, I believe that you believe that's your daughter, but I don't know. And I'm like, that's no, you don't.
Yeah.
And Robin goes, listen, if anybody out there listens to you and has their loved ones taxidermied, they'll be the first. Meaning you haven't done this.
Right.
And then Howard goes, Fred, what do you make of this? And Fred goes, I think he's got to go back to Stella Adler. Stella Adler is
like
an acting
school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I looked into it. I've got a website. There was a whole movie that this guy made about Callistra.
Oh my God.
His real name is Craig Kalman. He is an actor from LA.
Why did he choose Anthony Zipper?
I don't know.
It is a memorable name.
It's a memorable name. And he's got this extensive old website where he tells the whole story of Callistra and a documentary that he made and other family members that he started to invent that that had their own connections to Callistra and stories. And I've looked into the movie that he made about Callistra, and it looks to be very complicated and not about Callistra.
Uh-huh.
It's like kind of about him. Because he's an actor.
I mean, that sounds right.
Right. But so
sounds like this guy likes making things about him.
Yes. He keeps referring at the beginning of the website because it's almost like one long blog post that he keeps adding new stuff to. Like, it'll be like, update 2001, update 2008.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps adding to the website. At the start, he talks about how this is the story of his associate, Anthony Zipper. So Anthony Zipper is real. He's not Craig Kalman. He's Craig Kalman's associate.
Yeah.
But by the end of the website, while it's where it's been like 8 years since he started this, it all of a sudden changes tone entirely and becomes about how Craig Kalman, the actor, went to a book signing that Gary Delabate did.
Okay.
And he brought a copy
for Call Me Baba Booey?
Maybe, I guess so. And he brought his DVD, The Story of Callistra, and wrote, like, let's see if Mr. Delabate remembers me. And he took stories
around.
What
does that prove or not? You know what I mean? Like,
he took photos around the bookstore with like his DVD next to one of Howard Stern's books.
Yeah.
And then he gets up to the front and he's like, he remembered me. Like, here's Gary Delabate smiling. He's got a selfie with Gary Delabate. And so I'm like, so was he a plant? Or I guess not. He really did just get on the show.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Yeah.
And then here's the way that his website.
I mean, they could have known that he was full of it and they put him on the show, but it doesn't sound like they like created this farce themselves.
Right.
They might have heard about this dude who has this doll that he says is his taxidermy daughter.
They almost let this guy try out his character.
Yeah.
And tried not to burst his bubble.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But here's what he says on his own website. Of course, I never heard from those Stern people again. I guess because they're still incredibly pissed that I punked them so royally.
Oh my God.
Once again.
I don't know about this Craig. Is that what his name is?
Craig Kalman.
Yeah.
Once again, nobody believed him.
Right.
And they wanted to throw that thing down the stairs.
It doesn't sound like he really punked them to me.
He is still a working performer. He was a background office guy on Mad Men.
Okay.
So like he's in like a million episodes blurry and in the background.
Uh-huh.
And he's got like screenshots of every time he was like, that's me going down the staircase in the background.
Yeah.
Which admittedly, I would probably do. That's awesome. But yeah, it's like a whole thing. And I guess he tried to spin it off into its own little cottage industry for himself.
Right.
Which, power to him. But he certainly didn't punk them. To me,
no.
They really didn't believe it.
Does he have a social media presence today?
Yes, and I have looked into it, and he writes, he's the kind of person that writes his opinions on controversial topics in such a way where you don't really know what he's saying.
Okay.
But you kind of get the drift, and you don't like it.
Mm, okay.
So I'm not going to make any claims or anything, but I did just try to see, like, does he have, like, a really good sense of humor about this or whatever?
Yeah.
And it seems to be tricky to me.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not so cut and dry. He seems like a perfectly nice man.
What is?
You know?
Yeah.
But I do not think that he fooled. I do not think that he fooled.
Doesn't sound
Howard
like it.
Howard Stern, Robin Quivers, Fred Norris, and Gary Delabate.
It doesn't sound like
especially
it.
Especially Robin
sounds
Quivers,
bizarre.
Who's like a genius.
Yeah. She, like
Fred.
Literally, she's like
yes.
Mensa or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Fred, who I think is also supposed to be
I didn't know that.
Incredibly intelligent, I think. Right? Didn't he do like
I don't know.
She was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he was her
Lifeline
backer in the audience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And did very well.
Oh, cool.
But yeah,
love
that's
Robin.
The story of Callistra, the supposed dead daughter that was brought onto the Stern show because she was such a big fan.
That's
so much so that
so
she named
weird.
Her Turtle Howard and her kitty Robin.
I still don't totally understand what this guy was going for. Like, what's going on here?
Well, okay, I'll tell you. I'll tell you another thing that I really, really dislike.
Yeah.
That this guy did.
Uh huh.
He tried to keep calling in. Right. He tried to keep the bit going.
He tried to be kind of like a recurring character on the show.
Yeah. On the Stern show, sometimes the callers themselves are recurring guests in a way.
Yeah.
They call in almost every week, and so he kept trying to do that. I guess they used to have a character. There was a guy that was featured on the show all the time, Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
When he died, Craig Kalman called in as Anthony Zipper offering to taxidermy Hank the Angry Dwarf, and even posts on his website. He's like, and that was on the morning of September 11th, 2001, just before. And I'm like, I don't like this co-opting of genuine real world misery into your character. I really don't like it when people do that.
That's not like an appealing thing to have be your thing.
No.
Offering to taxidermy people who've just died.
Like a real guy who like was like a troubled individual. Like,
right.
It's gross. It's gross.
That's not like a zany, like fun thing.
No.
Will the Farter, he is not. It's another Howard Stern recurring character.
You're right about that. Will.
That's the kind of thing we like around
is
here.
It?
Well.
Do you like that?
No.
Anyway, that's my first quote-unquote fraudster.
Really
more of a character, but where else would we ever
still
talk about
fraud.
This guy?
Still a fraudster.
True. He punked them royally.
Yeah, my God.
So he said himself, so he was trying to pull a fast one.
Right.
I'm not accusing him of anything.
No, of course not.
Good job, Craig.
Did a great job. Craig?
I've already finished the story, and it's already out of my head. Yeah, good job. Just in case he hears this.
Of course.
I like what you did. Just in case he's one of those people that, like, anytime you talk about him, if it gets, like,
I know.
Like way
that,
to go.
Like that guy from The Demon of Brownsville Road.
Yeah, the dude from The Demon of Brownsville Road got into a real angry tete-a-tete with me.
Yeah, on YouTube.
Yeah.
He was keeping an eye on content about himself out there, and I spoke about him in an unflattering way, but Will was manning the YouTube, so he took the brunt of it.
I offered to read the book to give him his fair share.
I know, when you saw, I was like, Will.
What? I don't want to just like crap on people. So I said I would read
from
his book.
From what I remember about this guy.
Yeah. So I did buy his book, and I did read some of it until I couldn't anymore.
Yeah, no, this guy. Look, I don't really remember. That's what I was about to do.
It's not my kind of guy.
It's not my kind of guy, from what I remember. I don't remember enough, though. There just aren't that many people who I have like a real bad taste in my mouth about, who I don't know, who I would say on the show, I think this guy's a liar. And so if I did it then, I believe myself.
Yeah.
And so there must be something not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, just to be careful. Way to go.
Yeah, right.
You really punked Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Punked.
I know.
Still using the word punked.
It's a little late, but
anyway.
What are you going to do?
Anyway, I do have other stuff that I can tell you, but my other things are micro, so I think we should do yours, and if we have time, I can share some of the other stuff that I've looked up.
Okay, perfect. All right, so I also have a single person topic.
Yes.
We are going to talk about Sylvia Brown, psychic medium.
Yeah.
But first, we are going to talk about ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
We just want to make sure that you know that you can find everything related to Guides to the Unknown at GTTU Pod. You can also support the show if you would like to thank us for doing this every week by going to patreon.com/GTTU Pod. And if you donate $4 or more per month over there, then you get access to a monthly bonus episode that's released on the 13th of every month. At this point, if you're listening in real time, we have 21 over there. We also do a monthly live stream with all of our patrons where we plan the next month of shows. We talk live to everybody in the chat to get their input, and they get to get a jump on seeing what's going to be coming. And it's a really fun, nice time. And we have extras like commentaries for all the Scream movies, video game playthroughs. I post my notes for the show every week, so you can kind of see what's coming. And we have an awesome Discord where people are all talking about spooky stuff and otherwise every single day.
It's super fun. Recently, after we do a show and we put it out, I've been posting like pictures and context into the Discord group, stuff that can't make it into like the audio only show, I'll just give to the Discord over there, which is super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, check out the GTTU Patreon. It's super fun. And we keep getting people that are signing up and having a good time in there.
I know. It's really awesome.
Which honestly, like we're trying to keep this show going, but we also like, we try to create like a little party for people to engage in. So really, if you're enjoying this show, there's a whole bunch more GTTU Pod that you could be having fun with.
Yeah.
I also want to put this out there. I've recently been working on my my social media.
Mm-hmm.
I almost said supernatural.
Ah.
just a, I don't know, my neurons are all
That's all right.
misaligned. Follow me at The Myth Traveler. I've been posting little pieces of my horror collection.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
It's fun. And just telling like little stories, where I got stuff, what it means to me. It's a good time. And I usually am terrible at social media, and I'm trying. So follow at The Myth Traveler, a.k.a. Craig Kelman. If you need to attack me, that's where you can find me. Like, once again, I love what you did.
You just gave him a roadmap.
I did.
You're a madman.
It does feel like the kind of story where the person
I know
comes to us or something. It's happened before.
I'm afraid you're manifesting this.
So am
While I agree with you, stop saying it out loud. It's like Bloody Mary. You're going to draw him to us.
Well, hopefully Sylvia Brown can't come get us. I don't believe death would stop her. Do you?
I think it did. I don't think...
Oh, she's stopped?
I think she's had a hard stop. I don't think she was plowing forward all that well in life anyway with stuff that she was doing. So, that's not true. She was extremely successful.
That's a wrap, but, wrap.
But not, I wouldn't say, accurate. So I don't think her aim is going to be true enough to come after us.
Okay.
So Sylvia Brown, I bet if you were to Google her, if you don't already know what she looks like, I bet you'd be like, oh yeah, this lady. I've vaguely seen her before. I know that this is a famous psychic. So she mainly became famous because she was a regular on the Montel Williams show,
right,
which was a talk show that ended, it probably ended like 10 years ago now, but it was super popular. And she would come on for segments where, among other things, she would talk to the parents of missing children and give them her psychic and mediumistic insights onto where they might be. So again, a psychic is somebody who can, you know, see the future or see things that aren't right in front of them. A medium is somebody who can speak to the dead, and she claims that she's able to do both of these, or claimed that she's able to do both these things. She passed away in 2013. I would say that she is just as famous for being like a medium as she is for being a bad medium and an inaccurate medium. Obviously, she wasn't all inaccurate, or else she wouldn't have been able to be so successful. She wrote over 40 books over the course of her career. She was a working medium for like 55 years or something like that. Lots of TV appearances, mostly on Montel. She didn't really love interviews, but she would do them every once in a while. And her phone readings, like at the time of her death, or you know, whenever she retired or something, it was like $750 for a half hour reading.
God.
And that was, you know, if she died in 2013, then it would be much more now,
right,
for the equivalent. So she was doing just fine monetarily and just success-wise, basically.
Yeah.
One of her books was called Past Lives of the Rich and Famous, and she gave this quote to the Wall Street Journal in 2012. She said, quote, "I don't think Jennifer Aniston's marriage will work after she gets married. Kim Kardashian will discover her acting abilities, and she'll be like Liz Taylor. Lindsay Lohan, I don't mean to be hateful, but it's kind of a lost cause for now. When she's about 30, she'll be fine." So, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Why? What's
Kim Kardashian doesn't act, but Jennifer Aniston's marriage to Justin Theroux did indeed not work out. Yeah. And Lindsay Lohan at 30, you know, better than she had been at the time that this interview was going on.
I saw some headlines. She's going to be in something.
She is. She's going to be in a Netflix rom-com that sounds suspiciously like Overboard, starring Goldie Hawn, but I guess it isn't an Overboard remake. They already did that with Anna Faris like a couple of years ago.
Underboard.
It's very weird. It's probably Underboard. So sometimes you get a hit.
Yeah.
For something even more relevant that you may have seen get tossed around on social media over the last year, she seemed to have predicted the coronavirus pandemic.
No.
Did I say pandemic? I think I did.
I don't know.
The hell's the matter with me today?
Before we've got an issue. It's hot in here. I
are you over caffeinated from this thing that
what?
You're drinking?
What? Why?
Because you were stumbling over your words. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. You're drinking this like gigantic coffee, and we all got somebody's wrong order, and it's like basically ice cream coffee. I think you're over sugared and over caffeinated.
Maybe it was. It's for Nicole.
Yeah. And it's like
venti vanilla cream cold brew with extra sweet cream vanilla super cold. Foam, funnel, cake, funnel, what?
I don't know. It just
funnel
says funnel.
Topping,
yeah.
4 pumps of added funnel syrup, 1 pump of white mocha.
I think you're all hopped up on goofballs.
I'll never sleep again.
Yeah, and it's 6 o'clock. Why are you still drinking? It's 6:45 as we record. What are you doing?
It's delicious.
Are you insane? Put that to the side.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it sounds delicious, but...
You know what?
I wonder why you've been tripping over your words.
You're right. I'll get rid of it.
Yeah, okay. Down the hatch goes for
it's
our
gone
listeners.
Now.
Yeah. Okay, so yes, she seemed to have predicted the coronavirus pandemic. In her book, End of Days, Predictions and Prophecies About the End of the World, which came out in 2008, she said, quote, in around 2020, a severe pneumonia-like illness will spread throughout the globe, attacking the lungs and the bronchial tubes and resisting all known treatments. Almost more baffling than the illness itself will be the fact that it will suddenly vanish as quickly as it arrived, attack again 10 years later, and then disappear completely.
Oh.
Now, obviously, not dead on. Some people have pointed out that it sounds a little bit more like SARS than the coronavirus. The coronavirus certainly didn't disappear suddenly or whatever.
Nope.
I will say, it's a decent hit to say that in 2020, an illness that is like bronchial and stuff will sweep the globe.
Yes.
But, you know, a broken clock is still right twice a day.
I want to make this observation, too.
Okay.
The former president used to always say, it'll be gone. It'll disappear in hot weather. It'll be gone by May of last year. Could she have had a prediction of him talking about it?
So do you think she had like a vision of him doing that? She's like, okay, noted.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, honestly, right? if we're to believe
all
exactly
this stuff.
That's
exactly what he said.
You're right. He did say it's just going to be gone.
She predicted everything that an idiot said.
Maybe. Honestly, if we're going with the realism of this, then that's not a bad bet as to what kind of prophecy she would have gotten that would lead her to write that.
It's weird.
She probably heard Dum Dum saying, like, it's just going to leave.
No
one. It's going to be too hot for it.
Yeah. Because I would say otherwise, of course, it's garbage.
Yeah.
But somebody did very famously on
a global scale talk about how
it's going to disappear.
That's true. I think you got something there. I think it's not impossible. She has acknowledged her own swings and misses in the past, though. She said in the same article from the Wall Street Journal, it's so sad. Anything that has to do with God, people want to dispel. A doctor can make a mistake and still be a doctor, but if a psychic is wrong, everybody's skeptical. And indeed, we are skeptical because this lady is made of hooey. And let me tell you some of the biggest hooey piles. Her most famous inaccuracies.
Hooey Piles, by the way, is my favorite musician. Have you heard the new Hooey
Piles? Captain Huey Hooey.
The new Hooey Piles record. It stinks. It sucks. You should quit. People hate the new Hooey Pile even more than the last one.
It's a headline on newspapers around the globe.
It's always publicized.
New Hooey Pile record. We hate it.
It's every time he releases new music, it makes headlines about how we hate it even more than the last thing he did. He's famous for everyone always hating his work.
Yep.
Hooey Piles.
New Hooey Piles. This one's even worse. Okay. So I'm really going to bring it down.
Oh, God. Okay.
I'm glad that we got our hooey piles in so we could raise our vibration like we were talking about last week. Our vibe is up.
Yep.
I'm about to bring that vibe right down, baby.
Great.
So hopefully because it was up so high, we'll still be like in the middle.
Yeah, you know?
So this is the big one that she got really a ton of backlash about. Rightly so. In 2002, she went on Montel with the parents of an 11-year-old who had disappeared, whose name was Sean Hornbeck. And she told them that he had been kidnapped by a dark-skinned Hispanic man with dreadlocks and that now he was deceased. Then in reality, in 2007, Sean was found alive and well, living with his abductor, whose name is Michael Devlin, and he was a white guy with short hair. So everything is wrong that she said. And it was a headline everywhere because, first of all, he had been missing for 5 years. So, like, holy crap, this kid's alive. Like, everybody's so relieved. But also, like, hey, remember when his parents went on that show and that psychic told him that he was dead? Like, that's devastating. And it was also completely untrue. So Sean's parents told journalists that one of their lowest points through the whole ordeal was when Sylvia Brown told them that their child was dead. His father, Craig, told CNN that hearing that was one of the hardest things that they ever had to hear. That wasn't the only time that she did that. And
it's horrible.
It's terrible. I tried to find, and I understand why. I was curious about whether Sean Hornbeck ever commented on that. It looks like he never did, which is fine. It's not a criticism. It looks like he never did some sort of like sit down interview after being like rescued and everything. So I don't know what his thoughts are on that.
He might just want his privacy.
Yeah, totally. But it's horrible.
It's horrible.
It's disgusting. And it's consistent with her. She's
It's predatory.
It's so predatory. Like, and it's horrible.
The idea of telling people, don't bother keeping hope alive.
Yeah, yeah.
For what? You know?
Terrible. I didn't copy them all down. You can go to, there are links in the show notes that have kind of like, not exhaustive lists, but like lists of things that she told people that were later inaccurate. And like, she really put people through the ringer. Like, she told somebody that their daughter who was missing, I didn't write these down to include them because like, this is such a bummer. And like, I don't really want to talk about like all the true crime of it. That's really sad. We're kind of just talking about the fraudiness of it.
Yes.
But anyway, just another example of like how this really would mess with a person who's like with them in person's lives, is that she told a woman that her daughter who was missing was in LA working as an exotic dancer. And so that woman like flew out to LA right away and started like going from strip club to strip club, like with her daughter's picture, asking if anybody had seen her. And then sometime later they found her daughter's body and they were able to determine that she had died the night she'd gone missing. And like, this woman spent all this money and time and hope because Sylvia Brown like pulled something out of her ass. I think she just pulls things out of her ass.
She was, well, here's the crazy thing is like, I also put a lot of blame for these things on like the showrunner. Like Montel has to shoulder some of this for, she's a great spectacle, right? Mm-hmm. Like you bring Anthony Zipper on the Howard Stern show with some outlandish story because you know people are going to talk about it. It's been 21 years and I'm talking about it here. You know
but
what I mean?
Like, that's a victimless crime.
Correct.
It's just stupid.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
But like, this is not a victimless crime despite how entertaining it is.
Yeah.
Like I don't care about the entertainment value in something if it's exploitative and hurting people, crushing somebody's hope or giving somebody false hope so much so that they then risk their own livelihood to try to follow out the garbage that you told them.
Yeah.
Like it's
like unconscionable.
Unconscionable. It's like anti-human.
Yeah, it is. It's really horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah, and like Montel apologized to, now I'm getting mixed up. I can't remember if he apologized publicly to Sean Hornbeck's family or this next person who I'm going to talk about, who I'd say is her second most infamous, like, you were totally full of it thing. But he also, like, people have asked him about having Sylvia Brown on. He's like, she's so much fun. She's a character.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's not fun for
it's
the
people.
I think that there, I don't
it's
think
not fun.
Every,
it's not funny.
It's not fun or funny. No, it's not. But I don't think that every single time she came on was with parents of missing children. I think that sometimes she did come on and it was just like zany, whatever, like audience questions. So I guess that's what he's referring to, but it's still not.
Then don't bring.
One time is too much of that.
One time is too much. Don't bring people going through actual heartache to talk to the person who's so much fun, Sylvia Brown, who, by the way, didn't seem like a ball of laughs.
Definitely not. She seems like an a-hole.
Yes. So I fault him.
Yeah, of course.
It's horrible.
It totally is. And so it'll just be one more like bummer story, but it's a big part of who Sylvia Brown is.
Yeah.
Same kind of scenario. It was 2 years later, and she told the mother of kidnapping victim Amanda Berry that she said she's not alive, honey, and that Barry was in water and that she had a vision of Barry's jacket in the garbage with DNA on it. Oh, this is so horrible. I'm going to bring it back up-ish in a second. Barry's mother died 2 years later believing that her daughter had been killed because Sylvia Brown told her this. And then Amanda Berry was found alive in May 2013. She was one of those three girls who was abducted by Ariel Castro.
Oh, in the house.
Cleveland, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was kept in the house. And so, again, I wanted to see if she said anything about the Sylvia Brown stuff, because I remember that she did do some interviews and stuff like that after, because it was so unbelievable. I just remember it. And she said that she saw that episode while she was in captivity. She saw her mom on the show. She saw Sylvia Brown telling her that, and it was like devastating. And so actually I wrote down, Montel issued an apology to her.
It's so the life or death stakes of this stuff, like, it, psychics are, you know, if you take personal comfort in speaking to a psychic or going to a psychic, you know, good for you. I understand that people get something out of that. Mm-hmm. I think psychics as a form of entertainment are, if they're commenting particularly on life or death stakes, are horrible. They have life or death stakes to the things that they say and tell people.
It seems so. Again, if we're just assuming, or if we're thought experimenting, that psychics are real, it seems unethical to even comment on stuff like that. Right. I think they probably just should not at all, even if it is or whatever real. Yeah. They should just not touch that.
I think it's horrible.
So there is a magazine called The Skeptical Inquirer, which is run by CSI, which is something that we talked about before. It's the Center for Skeptical Inquiry.
Right.
And they did a 3-year study on Sylvia Brown's accuracy. She claimed that she had an 85% accuracy rate, which I know really sticks in your craw. When we went to see a psychic together in the episode Mystic Chrissy, a handful of episodes ago, companion piece to Mystic Willie. The psychic who you spoke to said she had a 95% accuracy rate, I believe.
Yeah.
And you were really hung up on, like, how do you know that?
How do you know?
I don't know.
How are you running your stats?
I don't know.
Show your work then.
Yeah, show your work.
If you're going to tell me that you're 95% accurate,
uh-huh,
I should be able to see the receipts.
Yes. Yes, I think that's probably true. So they decided to take all the time she's been on TV talking about cases that she worked as a psychic detective on, cross-reference those with information on the cases from newspapers that came out later, and see what her accuracy was on these. They found, so there were 115 cases that she has mentioned publicly and commented on and given her thoughts on or whatever. And there were 25, when they got down to it, that had known outcomes. So they could say, yes, she's right or wrong. She was wrong in all 25 of them. And then in all of the other cases that are still unsolved, so you can't really check the accuracy, her predictions still couldn't be proven or disproven. Right. Still not good. So I did the math. It took me a minute to remember how you do that thing, to figure out percentages or whatever, numbers on top of each other, across, multiplying everything.
What do you mean? Fractions?
Yes.
Two numbers on top of each other.
I did the math. And if we are being very generous and saying that actually she's right on all of these 90 other cases, maybe she was wrong on the 25, but she's right on the 90, she is still only at a 78% success rate.
Okay.
That's not 85, Sylvia.
That's not 85.
I don't know where you got that from. And yeah, they aren't just members. They're people's, numbers. They're people's lives.
Yeah.
She sucks. So what is this person's deal? Yeah. Like, why was she like this? Why are you like this? I couldn't find that exactly, but I will say that she seems like she was plain not nice.
Yeah.
So there was a website that was run just by a hobbyist dude who was used to seeing her on TV and was like, I don't like this, called StopSylvia.com. And her first husband, Gary Dufresne, granted them an interview.
Dufresne.
Yes. Dufresne. It's a French thing.
I'm guessing.
It's French, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Andy Dufresne.
Probably doesn't shave his pits. It's that line in Home Alone where they go, French chicks don't shave their pits. Andy Dufresne. Whatever.
Well, Andy Dufresne's the guy from the Shawshank Redemption. This is Gary Dufresne.
I bet Gary doesn't shave him either.
I bet you're probably right. You know, who knows? Maybe he likes the feel.
Yeah.
The
touch. The feel
of Gary.
Of Gary.
Okay. He granted StopSylvia.com an interview after the Sean Hornbeck thing because he was so disgusted. She was married 3 times. I think he was her first husband. And so it was a while ago. I believe they were married in like the late 1950s. And the Sean Hornbeck thing happened in the early 2000s. So he hadn't been with her for a very, very long time. Yeah. He said, I try to get her out of my mind as much as possible, but the damage she does to unsuspecting people in crisis situations is just atrocious. And he offered up this anecdote to kind of show how her mind works a little bit. He was talking about a party that they had where she was reading people's tarot cards, like in the 60s or 70s. And as they were cleaning up, he says, quote, I said to her as we were washing dishes and she was wiping, I said, Sylvia, how can you tell people this kind of stuff? You know it's not true, and some of these people actually are probably going to believe it. And she said, screw them. Anybody who believes this stuff ought to be taken.
See, con artist.
Mm-hmm.
She can do it, and right. She was entertaining at doing it, so mm-hmm. She was able to keep the party going.
Yes,
That also just tells you everything you need to know about. She didn't care about the outcome of saying these things to people. She cared about saying it on television, getting paid for it, and making sure that other people would keep asking her questions. It was irrelevant to her the well-being of these people when she told them that their child was alive.
Yeah.
Go fly out and find him, or dead. Give up all hope.
Yeah.
She didn't care. That's sociopathic. Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
Yeah. It's really, really horrible. And so now I want to finish up with, I had an awareness of Sylvia Brown just as a thing, but I want to finish up with this piece of writing that like really made me interested in her and like, what the hell is this lady's deal? And it's by John Ronson. So he is an investigative journalist and he wrote this article in 2007 for The Guardian, but it's in his book that's a compilation of essays that he's written called Lost at Sea. And so I think that the title Lost at Sea is in reference to this article, actually. So this was written in 2007. I am thinking, so Sylvia Brown died at 77 in 2013. So here she might have been like 72 when they went on this cruise, assuming that it was written the same year that he took the cruise. So anyway, John Ronson like came across Sylvia Brown in this whole thing after the Sean Hornbeck fiasco. But she stopped doing interviews after that because she was just getting crap from people. But he really wanted to talk to her. He was like fascinated by her and like, what is this woman's deal? So he was researching her online and he saw that there was a cruise going on where she was the main event. It was a cruise where every night there'd be a lecture, I guess you call it that, a lecture with Sylvia Brown, where she takes questions from the audience.
Right.
And you can maybe get a psychic reading with her. And so he figured if we're going to be trapped on a boat together, maybe at some point I can corner her and at least get like a couple of words. So the way it worked is that there were multiple opportunities for readings. It was like an every night thing. And she would be on stage and pull a name from a hat, shout out that name to the audience, and then we get to ask her one question. There were hundreds of people there, so apparently the bad publicity from the Sean Hornbeck thing didn't hurt her career like that badly.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Right. And also like maybe it was like normies were like, oh yeah, she's BS, but people who are like deep believers of hers who've read parts of her, you know, 40 book catalog were like, yeah, I mean, you have to give her a break. Not everybody's right on every single thing.
The doctor thing. You know, if a doctor screws something up, you know, it's just a mistake. But if a psychic screws it up, then everybody's a skeptic. That quote of hers, like, that's a great soundbite.
And some people could take that and run with it. Yeah.
You are a predator.
Yeah. It's just not a mistake. Yeah. So he notes that during these lecturing sessions, she wouldn't pause as if she was like pulling an answer from the spirit realm and being like, she was like answering like really fast, like off the cuff. And it was just like kind of unusual. It's not the way you usually. And again, who knows what psychics, if any, are being genuine or whatever, but it's still just not the way you're used to seeing psychics work. It just seemed like she was saying the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, it's not the showmanshipy sort of like, yeah, I'm sensing it. I'm getting an answer from somebody. You could ask her like, you'd be like, yeah, what is my grandfather's favorite food? She'd be like, fudge.
Yes, she would just, it sounds like it was like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there was time to socialize as well when they're on the cruise, obviously. And so John asked a woman who had a question answered whether Sylvia had helped her during that session. Is a woman who asked why her husband had killed himself. And Sylvia said he was bipolar. And the woman said, no, it didn't really help. Like, he had physical pain. He wasn't bipolar. But I just didn't want to say anything and, like, make it weird. So Ronson posits that Sylvia might be getting by a lot of times just on the politeness of her audience, like not wanting to cause a thing and being like, no, especially because she's so rapid fire and like, I'm going here, I'm going there. There isn't even really time for you to be like, huh? Before she's like pulling another name out of a hat.
That's a very interesting point too, because if she was so comfortable with not caring about people or social niceties or showmanship, her blurting out an answer puts you in a position of going, no, or, but then you are being sort of transgressive.
Mm-hmm. You're holding it up. Like, there are other people that we need to get to here.
Either holding it up or being disagreeable in public. So she can be confident that you're just going to go, okay, just to move it along. That's a very interesting point.
Totally. And so I think it probably ends up feeding itself, because if people are at these things, they're getting their question answered, they're being polite and being like, yes, thank you. Like, other people see that. They're like, oh, good, she helped that person. I want that. And pursue contact with Sylvia. And it goes around and around. That person who is like, wow, they got something that helped them, I want that, ask the question. They don't get a good answer, but they still go, okay, thanks.
Yep.
And it just keeps happening, basically. But the goodwill towards Sylvia starts to erode on the cruise after a couple of days. They start telling John that they're kind of turning on her. Not everybody, obviously, but some people he's talking to. They're not loving her, like, cold, quick answers like this. Like, she's just, especially the first night, she's giving these, like, really negative answers. Like, one woman asks about her fractured relationship with her daughter, and Sylvia's like, stay away from her. She's not trustworthy. I don't like her. People are not into this. And also, a group of people saw Sylvia on the casino floor of the cruise, and they were excited, like, oh, Sylvia! And they said, I wish I had written the quote, but they said her face contorted, and she was like, get me out of here! To her, like, handler who was pushing her wheelchair and, like, booked it away from them.
Whoa.
And they were very hurt and insulted by that, understandably. So Ronson finds her, like, agent or publicist or something that's on the cruise and says, like, hey, I'm here. I'm actually a journalist. I would love to be able to talk to Sylvia. And he said he was fully expecting her to say, like, no. Yeah. And she was like, let me see what I can do. And he gets an interview with her. And she does nothing to help her case whatsoever. He tells her the thing. He doesn't start off with this. So I'm sure you like Easter him, but he tells her the thing about, like, people saying that I am sure he sugarcoated it, but like, they saw her on the casino floor and that she didn't want to be talked to or whatever. And she was like, no, people can come to me anytime. Like, I'm happy to talk to everybody. And was like kind of defensive and pissy about it. And at one point he asks her, he's leading into asking her about like Sean Hornbeck and Amanda Berry. And he says, and this is a quote, there are times when you've got it wrong in a very bad way with missing the kid, interrupts Sylvia. She means Sean Hornbeck. Yeah, I believed the kid was dead. She shrugs. What I found out later, Larry King wanted me to come on and explain, but I said I'm not going to explain anything, is there were three children missing. I think what I did was I got my wires crossed. There was a blonde and two boys who were dead. I think I picked the wrong kid. Sean Hornbeck, I say. Were the other kids missing from the same area? Absolutely, Sylvia says. At the same time? Yes, Sylvia asks. I have a tiny newspaper cutting about them back in my office. And he says, like, you know, it was an unsatisfying answer in general, but also vague enough that I can't fact check it.
Right.
There were kids who were kidnapped at the same time. I don't know where. Or no, I guess she said same area. But basically, it's like, that's so vague, I can't look into it. So the day after that interview that he has with Sylvia, it's only like a half hour long, he feels he's gotten enough material. He's done with the cruise. He's like not feeling it. So he leaves the cruise 2 days early. He like gets off in Greece or whatever to like fly back to London. And he had gotten friendly with some of the people who were on the cruise, and they had exchanged email addresses and stuff. So the next day when he got home, he had an email from one of his friends of the cruise saying that that night when she had her lecture, that she was going off about him, and that she told the audience that she hears some of them aren't very happy with her. Oh. And that this journalist, who was a pale little worm with dark energy, told her that.
That's awesome.
And I was just like bad mouthing him and stuff.
What a joy.
I know. So she seems like a real peach.
What a treat.
Yeah.
Glad I came on this cruise.
Yeah.
Sylvia.
I can see why you left 2 days early.
So you could dump all over my life and complain to me.
I know. Amazing. And so that's the story of Sylvia Brown.
Good God. Well, no, she's dead. So.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not going to.
She can't,
you know,
torture
hurt anybody
parents.
Anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Can I just roll through a few? I've got micro things.
Yeah.
That I thought might be fun. One of them I want to talk about real quick. I want to talk about Miss Cleo.
Oh.
Miss Cleo, I think, was one of the most famous for a time faces of the psychic realm. Call me Miss Cleo. So I looked into it a little bit. Miss Cleo was publicized as the sort of mascot, in a way, of the psychic network. What is this called? Psychic Readers Network from 1997 to 2003. And so this was inescapable. If you were watching TV, you would see an ad for Miss Cleo.
Totally.
It was a joke, the idea that you could call Miss Cleo. Miss Cleo is going to solve your problems. People would just talk about Miss Cleo.
Oh, yeah. So, Miss Cleo was huge.
Huge. In 2002, I was curious because I knew something happened. I didn't know what. In 2002, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, charged the Psychic Readers Network with deceptive advertising, billing, and collection practices. She was not indicted.
Uh-huh.
The network had billed its victims for an estimated $1 billion.
Oh my God.
With a B. $1 billion. Turns out that the network coined the title Miss Cleo and would send unsolicited emails to people, some of which stated, "Miss Cleo has been authorized to issue a special tarot reading. It is vital that you call immediately." So they would target people.
Mm-hmm.
Charges of deceptive advertising and of fraud on the part of the network began to surface around this time. Among the complaints were allegations that calls to Miss Cleo were being answered by her quote-unquote associates, who were actors reading from scripts, and that calls promoted as free were in fact being charged for.
Yeah.
Miss Cleo is a character.
Yeah.
Played by an actress named Yuri Del Harris. And she grew up in LA. Miss Cleo was supposed to be like from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And this character, the whole thing fell apart.
Yeah.
But Miss Cleo was so popular and Yuri Del Harris was so known, she became an actress. She did a voice in Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Oh, you know what? Weirdly, I read this Wikipedia like not super long ago because I was trying to remember Miss Cleo's deal.
Yeah.
I was trying to, I had in my head that she used to do Miss Cleo at like Second City.
Right.
Like the improv place. I was trying to remember if that was true. And so I looked this up.
That's funny. Yeah. So she played Auntie Paulette in Vice City. And so she was sort of, the implication is that she's somehow drugging the main character to get him to do her bidding.
Yeah.
Weird stuff. But so Miss Cleo is so famous. I've got this. This is something that she did. As Miss Cleo, Harris appeared in a 2015 series of advertisements for the General Mills breakfast cereal French Toast Crunch.
I don't remember this at all.
Here's why. The Psychic Readers Network intervened on the basis that they owned the character of Miss Cleo. The advertisements were discontinued.
Okay.
So Miss Cleo was never real.
Yeah.
She was a character. She was a mascot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the face of a company that was defrauding people for over $1 billion.
Yeah.
So that's Miss Cleo, the famous psychic. I've got a recent story. I looked up, I did like the Google News search.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a recent story of a psychic that was caught. Headline from The Guardian is, "She didn't see it coming. Psychic arrested for $800,000 of fraud."
Ooh.
Every headline you'll ever see about psychics being caught for stuff is like, but they didn't see that
coming.
Yeah,
of course.
This psychic didn't see it coming. Like, all the headlines have the same clever
naturally
joke. Right. So, here's what happened. Psychic Zoe, real name Ann Thompson, was arrested for defrauding a bunch of people. Well, I should rephrase that. She was arrested for defrauding people.
Okay.
One of whom she got for $72,000. That's insane,
horrible.
Right? But like I said, she defrauded $800,000 total.
Yeah.
Just one person she got for $72,000. So there were probably a million other people to add up to the $800,000 overall. No, her other victim she defrauded for $740,000.
That's horrible.
Two victims adding up to $800,000.
My God.
Here's a quote.
She's efficient.
It really was. Here's a quote from The Guardian. She convinced one of her victims that she'd never find love again unless she bought the psychic a 9.2 carat diamond ring. She also convinced the victim to spend large sums of money on spells that would vanquish demons, as well as on building a, quote, golden pyramid that would protect her and her loved ones from dying. Needless to say, the golden pyramid was entirely fictitious. She was caught in part by a former police officer turned private investigator turned, quote, psychic hunter.
Nice.
Named Bob Nygaard.
I think that's the guy who started StopSylvia.com.
Is that right? Look it back up. He is a self-professed psychic hunter.
I think it is him. Hang on. Well,
so,
go ahead.
Okay. So he has said that he has helped capture over 30 psychics and recovered over $4 million for people. He's been on TV and stuff for this. He was on a show on CBS called Pink Collar Crimes. The episode was The Psychic Didn't See Him Coming.
Oh. I watched Pink Collar Crimes.
Maybe that's why you know the name. So,
yeah, it's not. It's Robert Lancaster who started StopSylvia.com.
So this guy, Bob Nygaard, is famous for going after psychics, and it's basically like a niche business because nobody's ever really looking out for the victims of people who go to psychics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's part of a long history of famous debunkers. I've got a very fun little blurb about Harry Houdini to wrap, I think, everything up. I almost got into James Randi. I think he's his own thing. The very famous, the great James
Randi. We've talked about him a lot. Yeah.
Harry Houdini was going after psychics. Yeah. He didn't believe any of it. Here's from his Wikipedia. This is just a very fun little story, and then we'll get out of here. Houdini chronicled his debunking exploits in his book, A Magician Among the Spirits. These activities compromised Houdini's friendship with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who we talked about last week for believing in Frannick Klusky's butt molds.
Yep.
Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, was a firm believer in spiritualism during his later years and refused to believe any of Houdini's exposés. Doyle came to believe that Houdini was a powerful spiritualist medium and had performed many of his stunts by means of paranormal abilities and was using these abilities to block those of other mediums that he was debunking.
Wow.
So Sir Arthur Conan Doyle so believed in spiritualism and mediumship that Houdini, who was saying this is all fake and I'm debunking all these people and pointing out how they're liars.
Yeah.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle started to reverse engineer that to go, No. You're powerful.
Yeah, right.
You're a wizard, and you are interfering with the abilities of the other wizards.
He has a very creative mind.
It's so deep. He made it such a deep rabbit hole. This disagreement led to the two men becoming public antagonists, and Sir Arthur came to view Houdini as a dangerous enemy.
Ooh.
Doesn't that sound like
his Moriarty?
Yeah. See, I was thinking like Grindelwald.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like Voldemort, right? Like,
yeah.
He's my most dangerous enemy.
My most dangerous enemy.
My most dangerous foe. The name? Doyle. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Harry Houdini? Ah, you mean my most dangerous foe. Like, it's so theatrical to have.
What a time.
Who's your most dangerous foe? You know, I don't have a most dangerous foe.
No. No, I got nothing.
I got nothing. I don't know. Anyway, everybody, those are some people that claimed one thing and then everybody went, no. Nah.
I don't think so. I feel no.
Yeah, check the show links for sources for all these things. They're really interesting to learn about and talk about, even if I find many of them to be distasteful.
Yeah.
I think it's worth seeing what people do. There's value in it, especially because maybe you won't fall into the same pit afterward.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. Hope you enjoyed the show. As I said before, go to gttupod.com to find everything we got. We got merch, we got Patreon, we got show links, advertising options, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And make sure you follow us online. I'm at The Myth Traveler.
Yep, make sure you're following Will because he's doing a really cool series showing a lot of his horror memorabilia.
Yeah.
And I am at Chillin' Kristen.
Yeah, so we will be back next time to tell more frightening stories that are going to chill you to your core.
Yeah, you're scared.
Are you scared right now? Are you okay? But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the netherworld, go we.
Back to sit in front of a fan, go I.
Yeah, it's hot. Didn't we have a fan down here before?
Also, my heart is racing.
William, you've been jiggling your leg like the whole time, and you don't usually do that. I feel like you are...
jiggling and wiggling.
Yeah.
Might be over-caffeinated.
Yeah, you might be. And over-sugared. You're probably dehydrated. You're all screwed up.
I can see everything.